The Canon of the New Testament and the Da Vinci Code by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract of the talk. This talk responds to the particular claims of Dan Brown's mystery thriller, The Da Vinci Code, regarding how the Gospels of the New Testament came to be accepted. The mystery thriller, The Da Vinci Code, has attracted a great deal of attention in recent years. Then a good deal of hype leading up to the film coming out on it as well. A number of different things have been responsible for some of the controversy it's attracted, but one of these at least are the things that the Da Vinci Code has to say about the Bible. Here we give some excerpts from that particular work. On page 231, one of the major characters of the Da Vinci Code says, "The Bible is a product of man, not God. The Bible does not fall magically from the clouds. Man created it as a historical record of tumultuous times, and has evolved through countless translations, editions, and revisions. History has never had a definitive version of the book." On the same page he says, "More than 80 Gospels were considered for the New Testament, yet only a relative few were chosen for inclusion, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John among them." The hero asks, "Who chose which Gospels to include?" And he responds, "Aha, the fundamental irony of Christianity. The Bible as we know it today was collected by the pagan Roman Emperor Constantine the Great." On Jesus, and two pages further on, the same character says, "Until that moment in history," that would be AD 325, the Council of Nicaea, "Jesus was viewed by his followers as a mortal prophet, a great and powerful man, but a man nevertheless. Not the Son of God," says Sophie. "Right, Jesus' establishment as the Son of God was officially proposed and voted on by the Council of Nicaea. A relatively close vote at that." Regarding Constantine and the canon of the New Testament, he says, page 234, "Because Constantine upgraded Jesus' status almost four centuries after Jesus' death, thousands of documents already existed chronicling his life as a mortal man. To rewrite the history books, Constantine knew he would need a bold stroke. He commissioned and financed a new Bible, which omitted those Gospels which spoke of Christ's human traits, and embellished those Gospels which made him godlike. The earlier Gospels were outlawed, gathered up, and burned." Well, we ask ourselves these questions. Are these claims warranted? Well, let's see. We're going to consider here the early manuscripts of the Gospels, early references and quotations in the writings of Christian leaders called the Church Fathers. Well, early manuscripts. The picture we have here is papyrus P52, the oldest known fragment of any gospel. The front is John 18, verses 31 through 33, and the back, which is not shown, is John 18, 37, 38. And that tells us a little bit about this particular manuscript. It was probably in a codex form, that is like our modern books with separate sheets that are all glued together on one end and can be opened anywhere, etc., rather than like a scroll where the sheets are attached end to end and you have a long roll, because we've got two passages very close together on the front and back. And it's also probably not very large pages. We're looking at the top of the front page, if you like, and we're in verses 31 through 33, and then the top of the back of the page is only, four verses further on, so a small page. This fragment is dated on the basis of a handwriting style to about AD 125, which would be only 35 years after this gospel was written. Very short span for work from antiquity. This picture is papyrus P66, a manuscript of the Gospel of John, in which nearly all of the Gospel has survived. You can see, looking at the lower right of the picture, the corners of the pages behind this page. This is the first page of John. Now, this manuscript is dated by its handwriting style at about AD 200, and as I said, this picture shows the first page. Here we have one page of papyrus P45, which contains all four canonical Gospels in the Book of Acts. The manuscript is rather badly fragmented, as you can see from this page, which is actually one of the perhaps better or average pages. Now, this manuscript is dated from the 3rd century, so before 300, and so before Constantine. Take a look at a few post-Constantine manuscripts. From Constantine onwards, we have the entire New Testament preserved on a material called parchment, which is much more durable than the writing material called papyrus. Parchment is made from animal skins. Papyrus is made from a type of reed that grew rather well in Egypt and was sliced up and laid in pieces, thin slices across one another, kind of a network, if you like, and then dried out and became a kind of a rough paper. This particular manuscript is Codex Sinaiticus from the 4th century. This was originally a complete Bible, though parts of the Old Testament are now lacking. This is a picture of Codex Alexandrinus from the 5th century. It was also originally a complete Bible, but now lacks most of Matthew and part of John. What we see here in lacking pieces is rather common for really old manuscripts, is that they eventually start to fall apart, or pages get damaged and such disintegrate. This happens much less with parchment than it does with papyrus, so that we do have some parchment manuscripts in a pretty complete form, whereas our papyrus manuscripts are, by and large, mostly fragmentary. A third post-Constantine manuscript is this, the Freer or Washington Codex, named because it's in the Freer Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., part of Smithsonian. And this is from the late 4th or early 5th century. It's a one-volume copy of the four Gospels. The text of this particular manuscript is a mixture of the main text types from antiquity, but it shows none of the variations of the sort alleged in the Da Vinci Code. If we try to summarize what we know about the papyri, which are largely, well, at least the ones we're going to look at are pre-Constantinian, the graph at right lists the number of surviving manuscripts written on papyrus for the four Gospels. The yellow are those that come from after 300 AD, and the green those from before AD 300, and thus the green from before Constantine. There are 22 of the pre-Constantinian manuscripts. As you can see looking at the chart, eight manuscripts of Matthew, and these are manuscripts or fragments, one of Mark, four of Luke, and nine of John. Summarizing the papyri, because their age and the fragility of papyrus as a writing material, have all survived in only fragmentary condition. Still, from before AD 300, we have 22 papyri, which together preserve the following chapters of each gospel. The black print indicates partial, and the red entire. Matthew, we have no chapter that has been preserved entire, in spite of the eight manuscripts. But we do have parts of chapters 1 through 3, 5, 11, 12, 20, 21, and 23 through 26. Mark, likewise, we have no entire chapters, but we have parts of chapters 4 through 12. You realize we only have one manuscript of Mark from this period. Luke, however, with only four manuscripts, still preserves all of chapters 11 through 16, 23, and 24, and parts of chapters 1 through 10, 17, 18, and 22. So what it's lacking only chapters 19, 20, and 21 in their entirety, and otherwise it's got parts or all of the other chapters. John, which we have the most manuscripts for, 9, we have all of chapters 1 through 5, and all of chapters 7 through 13, and parts of chapters 6 and 14 through 21. So we've got some part of every chapter, and about half of the gospel in its entirety. What can we say on the basis of this material when we compare these texts, pre-Constantinian, with post-Constantine texts? The papyri show no evidence of tampering. Thus, the claim that Constantine upgraded Jesus in the gospel accounts is unwarranted. These show no sign of it. Pre-Constantine Gospels show the same Jesus as the post-Constantine Gospels. At most, Constantine could only have selected the Gospels that fit the program he was trying to advance, and presumably then left out the others, huh? Is there any evidence he did this? Well, let's see. We look now at the evidence from early Christian leaders. Besides the evidence from manuscripts, we have testimony of early Christian leaders regarding what Gospels were in use in their churches. This was, in fact, one of the criteria used to verify the authentic Gospels after persecution ended at Constantine's time. They held a meeting of church leaders, and they basically consulted on which Gospels had been known time out of mind in the earliest churches. Those turn out to be four Gospels. Well, here's the testimony from the early church fathers. The group we call apostolic fathers are the earliest. They pick up that name because they lived at a time and when they would have had contact with the apostles. The term is actually applied to some eight Christian leaders living between about AD 95 and 130 who wrote letters and other writings that have survived. Three of these works explicitly quote New Testament passages as scripture, and one such passage quoted is from the Gospel of Matthew. All of them make allusions to New Testament passages, including all four of the canonical Gospels, and no others. We turn to Marcion at about 140. He's an early heretic, and he gives us the earliest list of books he thinks belong in the New Testament. He includes only one Gospel, but it is Luke, and 10 letters of Paul, but these have all been modified to remove any indication that the God Jesus and Paul spoke of was the God of the Old Testament. Marcion believed that the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament both existed, but were two different individuals, and the God of the Old Testament was the maker of heaven and earth and did a crummy job of it, you might say, and that the God of Jesus was the highest God and would not dirty his hands with anything of that particular sort. Marcion is often considered a Gnostic, since Gnostics typically rejected the Old Testament, even though some of Marcion's views are rather different from fully developed Gnosticism, which comes actually around and shortly after Marcion's time. Others, though, who certainly are Gnostics, give allusions to the New Testament. Basilides, flourishing from 120 to 140, quotes from 1 Corinthians as scripture and alludes to Matthew, Luke, and John as authoritative. Valentinus, from about the same time as Marcion, authored the work we call the Gospel of Truth, which is now available in the Nag Hammadi papyri, which we hear something of in the Da Vinci Code. He cites Ephesians as scripture and alludes to Matthew, Luke, and John. Justin Martyr lived around the same time as well. He flourished about 130 to 160. Justin was a student of the Greek philosophers, but was converted to Christianity as an adult by talking to an elderly believer. He spent the rest of his life as a traveling Christian philosopher and died as a martyr, which is how he got the title, or whatever, martyr at the end of his name. In his two apologies to the Roman emperor and his dialogue with the Jewish scholar Trypho, Justin speaks of the Gospels and typically calls them the memoirs of the apostles, or in one case, the memoirs of the apostles and those who followed them. He uses our four Gospels and no others. We move on about a generation to Irenaeus, who flourished about 180 AD. Irenaeus was bishop of Lyon in southern France, but he actually grew up in Asia Minor, modern Turkey, an early stronghold of Christianity. We understand that Irenaeus had studied under two students of the Apostle John, Papias and Polycarp. Irenaeus wrote an extensive work against heresies, responding to the Gnostics, quoting from all the New Testament, but a few of the shorter letters. Irenaeus takes our four Gospels for granted, and even seeks to give symbolic reasons for why there are exactly four of them. He also says this, "So firm is the ground upon which these Gospels rest, that the very heretics themselves bear witness to them, and starting from these documents, each one of them endeavors to establish his own peculiar doctrine." Then he gives examples of several of the Gnostic gurus. The Muratorian canon comes to us from the same time period as Irenaeus. It's the oldest canonical list that's been preserved from the Orthodox side. It is all anonymous as regards its authorship, but internal information indicates it was written from Italy in the late 2nd century by a Christian leader there. Our only manuscript is broken at the beginning, but it starts with Luke as the third gospel, followed by John as the fourth. It rejects the writings of the Gnostics and the Montanists. Moving on to Clement of Alexandria, about 200 AD, Clement was head of the Christian school in Alexandria, which trained new converts as well as Christian leaders. He uses some of the non-canonical Gospels, but he distinguishes those from the ones, quote, that have been handed down, unquote. A generation after Clement comes Origen, flourishing about 230. He was successor to Clement as the head of the Christian school in Alexandria, but later moved to Caesarea, and there he develops the largest Christian library in antiquity. Origen gives us some insight into the status of the canon question in his time. He notes that two categories were commonly recognized by the Orthodox. First of all, books acknowledged by all Christians, and Origen puts 21 books in this category. That would be the four Gospels, the Book of Acts, 13 letters of Paul, one letter of Peter, one letter of John, and Revelation. And then the second category is books disputed by some Christian, as some Christians, and he has 10 books in that category. Hebrews, James, 2 Peter, 2 and 3 John, and Jude, which those six then complete what comes to be the canon in about a century or so. And then four other books which do not make it into the canon, the letter that we call Pseudo-Barnabas, the Shepherd of Hermas, the Didache, or Teaching of the 12 Apostles, and the Gospel of the Hebrews. Eusebius, writing about a century later, is from Constantine's time, and he gives us four categories of canon discussion then, the first two very similar to Origen's, the acknowledged books, 21 or 22 books, and he has the same books as Origen does, plus Hebrews, but puts a question mark on Revelation. His second category is disputed but familiar to most, and this is now smaller than Origen's is, and in fact contains the other five books that didn't make it into the first category, James, 2 Peter, 2nd, 3rd John, and Jude. His third and fourth categories are spurious but orthodox, and here he includes the Acts of Paul, or the Acts of Paul and Thecla, Shepherd of Hermas, Apocalypse of Peter, Pseudo-Barnabas, Didache, Revelation with a question mark, so his ambiguity of a revelation is whether it belongs in the acknowledged or the spurious, and the Gospel of Hebrews. And then his latest category is heretical, and here he includes typically Gnostic Gospels of various sorts, such as the Gospels of Peter, Thomas, Matthias, and various acts, which I'm not sure we'd call Gnostic, but at least Encratite acts in which the apostles are pictured as breaking up marriages and advocating that people not eat meat, the Acts of Andrew and John, and so forth. Well, let's try to summarize our material on canon. The evidence of canon shows us that Constantine did not suddenly set off in a new direction, putting together a new Bible. Rather, the four Gospels had been recognized by Orthodox Christians as authoritative for at least 150 years before Constantine, that would put us back in the mid to late 2nd century. Final decisions on the exact boundaries of the New Testament canon were not made until a generation following Constantine, but this involves only one book that could be called a gospel. It's the Gospel of Hebrews, and that's one that does not come up in Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code. You remember the Da Vinci Code remarks about Constantine and the New Testament canon were these, page 234. Because Constantine upgraded Jesus' status almost four centuries after Jesus' death, thousands of documents already existed to chronicle his life as a mortal man. To rewrite the history books, Constantine knew he would need a bold stroke. He commissioned and financed a new Bible, which omitted those Gospels which spoke of Christ's human traits and embellished those Gospels which made him godlike. Earlier Gospels were outlawed, gathered up, and burned. Almost totally wrong statement. Constantine did not upgrade Jesus' status. We have no evidence of thousands of documents existing. Constantine did not commission and finance a new Bible. He did commission making copies for the major churches of the Bible that existed. He did not omit those Gospels which spoke of Christ's human traits. That actually is a different topic here. Conclusions. We have restricted our discussion of the Da Vinci Code to its allegations about the canon of the New Testament. It fares very poorly here. What are the merits of the Da Vinci Code's treatment of Leonardo da Vinci or the Priory of Zion? It is not good history for the first centuries of the Christian era. Further reading would suggest Garlow and Jones's book, Cracking Da Vinci's Code. Well, that's the end of our talk here. Evidence on the New Testament canon does not support the book, The Da Vinci Code.